not good.
It was related to the fan setting on there, so I don't know what that was.
Well, I mean, I've got
can
it down
you reset
to like,
the actual thing? Is there a reset?
It's set to auto, and I've got it to like 64, and it won't go on.
What Grammy used to have.
Well, I'll leave this for you. If it starts to come on, you can adjust it.
I don't know that it's going to come on. But it's also We don't have as many people in here.
Chelsea. Okay. I want to, before we kind of start wrapping this up, which is already, by next Sunday we'll wrap it up and then we'll have the final quarter this year. I'm going to be doing a classroom about evangelism. It's not going to be a specific how-to. It's going to be, how would I define it?
What has been?
Maybe
who done it?
Maybe options.
Okay.
Ways to have a conversation or study with people might be what I consider it. Let me cast the screen. Switch over. Yeah, okay. Okay, so I wanted, let's kind of do a quick review of the whole vision. I would like you to have a big picture of the vision John sees. And the arguments all come from the details. People argue about details. And they're like, what is this beginning? What's that beginning? And I don't think those details change much about the big picture, and which is why I really haven't focused, tried to not focus a lot on the details in going through it this time. So let's start the beginning of the vision. Who is Jesus bringing a vision to?
John.
Okay. What is John's situation?
Is it this when
he's
on the island of
Patmos? Yes, yeah. So he is
exiled.
Okay. He's a prisoner. He has been accused for preaching the gospel of Christ. He has been convicted and exiled to a remote island for some period of time. What is the situation of his fellow Christians? Because he, at this point, him being exiled to Patmos most likely means he was already in Ephesus. The traditions are that in the 60s, when the Christians kind of fled Jerusalem, when the signs were coming that Jerusalem and Rome was having a conflict, the Christians left. And the Christians, John settled in Ephesus. And that was his kind of home territory. So he's exiled. But what's happening to the Christians in that area of Asia Minor? What's their condition?
Being persecuted.
They're being persecuted. By
probably killed.
They're being persecuted by Jews. They're being persecuted by Romans. They're being killed. But, and not just... They're under attack from the outside. What's their present own behavior like for many of them?
They're not in step with the gospel and not in step with God's word.
Many of them have become weak, right? They're suffering. So I think if we wanted to settle, it's like, so here is Jesus coming in the vision to people, to Christians who are suffering for the gospel. They are enduring hardship. And it wouldn't really matter when that was happening. But, so that's what the vision is. And Jesus appears, and what does Jesus look like? just kind of in a general statement, not all the specifics. I mean, how does Jesus appear to John?
Like shining bright, clean,
glorious.
Awe.
Awesome, right? I mean, the term awesome, that's what it's, the term awesome is made for, what he saw. We use it for things that are not really awe-inspiring.
Too casually.
But for Jesus, it was really awe-inspiring, right? And so Jesus comes, and he has a message for John and for the Christians, right? And in many ways, what is the message? If you were to sum up the message to these churches, these seven churches from chapters 1 through 3, to John and the seven churches.
Jesus is coming in glory.
Okay. He's coming in glory.
Keep holding on, keep hanging in there.
You're going to need to be faithful until the end, which we do see again in the vision. Remember a little bit later when he told them, you know, you're going to, for after you fall of Jerusalem, and then, you know, the beasts are going to start attacking those who name the Christ, right? The child that, you know, the beasts were trying to attack and Satan was trying to kill. But those who name the name of that, the Christ, they're going to have to hold on and be faithful. And they're going to have to die being faithful. So that's a lot of the message is, you're going to need to be faithful to the end. But I'm coming. But I'm not coming so quickly that you're not going to suffer. You're going to suffer. Now, he told a lot of them, you need to look at yourself and you need to repent of the things you're doing wrong. Because I don't just come and judge others. I'm going to judge you too. But there will be some time. So he's given them a sense that they are going to have to endure, aren't they? They're not going to have to wait a week. This isn't a week or two. They're going to have to endure some period of time that is going to be difficult. And so, in a sense, in the big picture, what is he trying to do for these people? Why is he bringing this vision to these people who are suffering? What is the goal of the vision?
Bring hope.
And courage. Give them hope and courage to endure to the end. When everything looks like you're losing. I just read something this morning, yesterday, last night. The whole mode, the most Christianized country in the world is still America. But the trend is it will not be majority Christian in the near future. And we will be like Christians have been throughout history. A lot of Christians, we would like to have, we want all the rules to be fit with Christianity, but we live in a place with a democracy, and the democracy gets to choose people, leaders, who don't. A lot of our leaders have been falsely naming Christ as their guide for a fairly long time.
It does already feel that way. I mean, like, even people who call themselves Christians, like, I don't think I work with a single person at Micron who
really
has any sort of faith.
Right. Yeah.
Except for, like, the Hindus. Like, yeah. Their faith, but no Christians who have faith.
Yeah, it just not. That's not really around that much, you know. And so, are we in the same similar trend, maybe? I think Christians throughout, why people have selected Revelation as a hopeful vehicle for almost 2,000 years. In their situation, they have looked at Revelation as being, oh, this is probably talking about our time.
Because you can't find things that are applicable in just about every time.
You can't, because every time Christians are suffering, they're going to look to this vision, and they're going to think, oh, this must be the time, because this has been the worst ever. Jack, just a couple of weeks ago, Rich and Dave and I were talking, and Dave's like, has it ever been worse? And talking about kind of in our lives. And I said, yeah, the 60s were worse. after John F. Kennedy was assassinated, Martin Luther King was assassinated, after Bobby Kennedy was assassinated, after Vietnam, and the post-Vietnam, early 70s.
Charles Manson?
It was worse.
It was bad.
It was worse in this country. You were talking about this country was going to kill itself. It was going to be on fire. Now, it's changed because a greater percentage of people have fallen away from religion. And so now the conflict is from a lot of people who are not really very godly. So godliness, not people weren't godly then either, but people were arguing about godliness in some respects, right? And now you just don't have it that much. And so it's changed, it's different. And to a Christian, I think, and a Christian feels worse. But in reality, you know, Dave and I were all talking, it's like, we were little kids, and we didn't watch the nightly news. And we didn't weren't getting a feed of what was happening in Vietnam every minute. We were just getting the nightly news. And as kids, we didn't watch it. Like, if your parents made you sit down and watch it, like, ah!
Well,
if
like, you even go back to, like, World War II, like, the entire world was insane during World War II. Yeah. In Europe and in, you know, in Russia, sure, and in Asia. And so there have been,
conflict is... National conflict is the norm. It is not the, it's not atypical. Human history, nations rise up and they want to conquer other nations. Sometimes they do it for just selfish reasons. Sometimes they do it actually to spur their own economy and growth. That's the way countries used to grow, by acquiring other countries' assets. And you know, that's just the reality. And it's not going to be, in fact, I think the greatest danger of a really terrible conflict on a worldwide basis is the crumbling economy of China right now. And most people don't know how bad it's crumbling. And it is like almost a Ponzi scheme in their banking system. It is collapsing. Now they're gonna prop it up like almost anybody else would. Any other country would, but you know, does it work? Does it not work? Who knows? They've been pretending like they have this great economy for a very long time, but they have like 20% unemployment in China. They have they're like their Dow, the equivalent of the Dow. It peaked in 2008 and has not returned to that peak since 2008. And so, when you have they and Russia under economic collapse, then they also not only have a lot of motives to get into war, to acquire Ukraine, to acquire Taiwan. They have a lot of motive behind acquiring those things because of a whole bunch of reasons. Now, anyway, so that's why everybody, you know, throughout history is everybody, there's always bad stuff going on.
Times.
Yeah. It always feels like that to some degree, you know. In every person who lives a fairly long life, you're going to have had times in your life it feels like everything is falling apart. And you're going to have times that felt like things are good.
Forrest and I used to joke about that 2012 movie when the world was supposed to end. I'm like, I'm going to show this to my children and we're going to tell them, hey, I survived that. It's like, can't get worse than this.
Right.
It's like comes into them like a documentary. Yeah, but you know, yeah. We can show it to our dogs
right
here now.
Yes. No, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it can't get bad.
Oh,
It can get bad. It got bad. He was telling these people, it's going to get bad. And they, remember, in this vision, the beast is going to try and mark them. And they have to refuse, and they have to keep the mark of God on them. So,
in a way, I think it's pretty comforting, though, to know, kind of in a backwards way, that it's always been this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be this way until it's over.
Right.
Permanently.
Exactly. That's the thing for us to not get too worked up over the problems around us.
Mortal problems.
Yeah. They're just part of humanity. They're not anything really unusual. think Americans in the 20th century got to where we, and not just Americans, I think a lot of people think of this idea that we're going to progress. The concept of creating a world utopia is often what leads to a lot of terrible ideas. The idea that you're going to create heaven on earth is just not going to, is not real. That's not going to happen.
Humans have been trying it since Babylon.
Right. Like, and you really got to be careful of people trying to create heaven on earth. They're the ones who are really going to control you, and they're the ones who really are going to dominate you.
You mean cultists?
No, like the guy I sit next to at work, he's actually running for office here, and he's very liberal. And the things that I hear come out of his mouth about like the way that they want to control speech, and it's like, and they think that's why. They're right. Going to make the world a better place.
We're going to turn.
Controlling all the
we're going to control everybody
ideas.
To be perfect.
It's kind of like that notion when you're trying to like for kids, it's like for them to grow and like, you know, really like learn themselves, like you have to let go a little bit. With dogs, it's like if you're walking them on a leash and they're like pulling, like you have to train them with a certain collar instead of a harness where they're gonna
continue.
It's like the more
push.
That you, yeah, the more that you pull back, the more they're gonna pull away from you and rebel. And so it's like those notions are just bad.
And so, you know, that this tug of the tug the world does of trying to create an ideal environment, because we try to do it in our families, in our home, right? We want a place of peace and quiet and comfort and all of that, and then people try to keep expanding that. And then some people get these visions of grandeur that they're going to do it for a whole state, or they're going to do it for a whole country, or they're going to do it for the whole world now. And when people start thinking like that, it's just like, this is the beginning of a nightmare for some people.
I hate that song. What is it? I don't know.
Imagine?
Yes. I just
despise
that.
Because
when he
had fallen into that exact same trap. It is like this concept that we're going to create this utopia on earth. Like, this is such foolishness. This is, but that's foolishness from a Christian perspective, right? But the, you know, so many people who they don't have that when they're not looking to, when they have no hope of a real utopia,
right?
They keep trying to create one for themselves and their kids.
And they have their own God, so.
And then people who are really controlling and power hungry begin to use those things for their purposes. And anyway, so, you know, stuff's gonna happen. Who knows what will go, I don't know. In fact, my current kind of philosophy is, whatever.
That's good.
I don't know what it'll be.
That's what
And I'm not going to worry about it.
I always say in our family is mortal problems. Because sometimes specific people, Haley and Matt, will read the news or whatever and just get all sorts of worked up. And I'm just it's not going to matter in eternity. It really won't.
I can easily imagine Matt all up in a titter about it.
Just being there's horrible things happening. I'm like, they're always happening and there always will be. Like, turn the news off.
Yeah.
It's like comparing.
Go play Fortnite.
The day that Idaho, that like Boise shut down during the plague, and now like looking at where we're at now, it's like that day I thought the world was ending. Like I got home and I just like went in and just was like sobbing to my mom. I'm like, the world is ending, and it's like here we are.
And it
it's
wasn't
like
even,
what? It wasn't even.
Wasn't even as bad as like 1917 or 1916 when that flu hit.
Yeah, it's like it's just it's the way of the world. It's the way
but
of humanity.
It was the worst one we've seen in our life.
So it's just
So the vision is for people who are suffering, and it's to give them hope and courage to keep pressing on. So he then turns, and the vision then moves to heaven to see Jesus take the throne, right, from God, begin to open the scroll, and then it becomes this warfare, and most of it is actually almost a build-up to the war. I mean, the reality is most of it's not a warfare. It's actually him opening these seals, and then we get all these four horsemen of the apocalypse, and we get these angels, and we basically, for chapters after chapters after chapters, we're just setting the stage. Here's the good guys. Here's the bad guys. Who are the bad guys in this vision?
The dragon and his armies.
What did you say?
The dragon and his armies.
So the devil. He identifies him. The devil, Satan, the dragon. Okay? He's behind all this. So in a big picture, God is telling them, the battle is between me and the devil. Right? Jesus and the devil are going to battle for who wins. Who wins that? That's not even a question, by the way. Okay? It really isn't a question, even in this vision. That is not a battle. God just decides that it's over. And it's over. He decided things existed, they existed. He decides that's it. He decides the devil's bound, the devil's bound. He decides the devil's loose, the devil's loose. He decides the devil is done, then the devil's done.
I always imagine kind of like an angry chihuahua that just finally annoys a Great Dane enough that it's just like whack, and then it's just done. There's no more.
Oh, those little terrible chihuahuas. You have the one little smack, the one
right,
little kick.
Right, it's just like hardly any effort, and it's
But you're right, that's so comforting to think about, like all the things we squabble about, you know, oh, we can't let this bill get passed, or we can't let this law, or people are freaking out about this or that or the other thing, and it's important to, you know, do what you can for the life you live, but God can just speak it away.
Yeah.
I mean, he's that powerful, so right. we're moving little chess pieces, and he's just...
Yeah, we worry about laws and all this stuff way too much. The laws rarely infringe upon us doing good. They really don't. I mean, laws rare. Now, do they give other people freedom to practice evil sometimes? Sure. But have people not been practicing evil?
Right. It's just changing the way they do it. It's not changing the nature of it.
Even the concept of abortion. That's been practiced in almost the killing of. Now they didn't kill infants in the womb. They just killed them after they were born. They have been doing that throughout history. Almost every culture that exists on mankind did that. They were born and went, nope, this one's... Now, in like all the Scandinavian countries, if that child was born with this disability, they did exactly what like a mother dog does when one of the pups born and doesn't look right. It won't feed it. And they set him out to die. Scandinavian countries, they did... If life was hard, that child can't take care of itself, we're going to let it die. That was their culture.
Even for something quite so simple as like a hair lip on a kid, they would do it.
If there was malformed anything, they'd let children die. And it got to the point that if they had enough children and, oh, it's a girl, well, why do we don't need more girls? The boy. We don't need more boys. I mean, that's what human history is full of. The Roman world was full of that. That was common in their time.
Well, Asia, like you said, everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, Christians actually were different. They were going and picking up children that people threw out to die, and they were caring for them. The Christians began to be different than the world. But the world has always been this way. And we pretend like it isn't. But we've been living in kind of a bit of a bubble. I think Americans have this idea that we've created this new little perfect world that where Christianity and goodness gets to, you know, dwell, and it's like, that's only if people are good. It doesn't matter what kind of laws are. It doesn't matter what the laws are. People are only as good as what they're going to do. And
well,
then
you were talking about today, the conscience that guides people. It's not the law, and it's not the duty of the government to control people's conscience. If it's
right.
If someone has ill intent, they're going to carry it out despite the law.
Right. So anyway, so most of this, you know, a lot of the middle chapters of Revelation are simply an unveiling of the sides, right? Because what's the bad side? The devil and then the two beasts. You got a beast, which he calls Babylon, and then we got a second beast, which he defines as some religious arm of Babylon. So that is the enemy of the Christians at this time frame, right? Now the reality is, can Christians find the works of the devil at work in our government? The people that rule in our country? Sure. Because he's the god of this world. He's the one that is the father of all the lies and deceptions and all this stuff. So that's why it fits. Whoever the oppressor is of the time, people think, oh, that must be that. They're the ones that are Babylon. And in a metaphorical way, I think that's true. But to these group of people, they have an enemy that God is going to battle, and in chapter 7, but God is going to seal all those that are his. He knows of all the people in the world who's his, who are his, and he's not going to let anything happen to them. And this multitude, they come from every place on the in the planet, basically. And then, the seven trumpets that begin to blow, and the angels are going to start blowing. And then when God is going to judge these beasts, who is he using to judge them? Who's actually that fighting?
The nature he created.
Nature. He just uses the stuff he's created to destroy them. And the angel blows a trumpet, and it's okay. We're gonna burn them up with some hail and fire. God doesn't need us to win this war. We're not in any way powerful enough to do a whole lot about the end of this.
Which is probably, it's comforting to us, but it probably would have been very comforting for them as well when they were in a position of such oppression, feeling so helpless and so...
Right. Yeah.
Dude.
I also think it's a really important message that a lot of Christianity that has gotten caught up in Americanism, national pride, being a Christian nation. It's just like, we've got to be armed to the teeth. If you want arms, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine too. It won't matter. I'm sorry, it just won't matter. What you do and don't do to fight the enemy just doesn't matter. You need to just fight it for yourself. You need to make sure we're fighting the enemy who's trying to change us and get us on his side by deceiving us and tempting us and do all that. And then we'd want to help others avoid that as well, right? But we don't need to fight. There is no enemy of God's that you and I need to take up arms against. They didn't either. Okay? This is a great, for us in Americans, we get caught up in this. Like, we have this right to this. It doesn't matter. That's fine. That's a fine right. But if that right doesn't matter, if you don't have it, does that mean you can't be a Christian? If you live in a country that doesn't have that right, you can't be a Christian? God's not going to be victorious for you because you don't have that right? No. So there's a lot of that happening in America, this kind of American nationalism that is kind of pretending to be Christian. And a lot of them don't go to church, but they've got this American pride thing going on. And that's not all healthy, by the way. Especially if you want to be godly. That's not a godly thing that's happening, at least from my perspective. That would get me very much people be angry at me in certain churches probably in the South, but
it's sort of like when people put their identity as American citizen above their identity as child of God. I feel like that's very common.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a real problem. God's great, but I'm more this than I am a child of God. Anyway, so this battle is just being set up all through these things, and the seals and the trumpets, and then eventually the bowls being poured out. So the battle and the woes and things are happening, and then you kind of have messages of like, hey, there's a angel, he's got these scrolls, and you got the witnesses, and you have this kind of battle between. And the devil and this and the child, the woman, right? That's still a battle between God and the devil, isn't it? It's just a different way to describe the battle between God and the devil. And it looks like the beast thinks it wins for a while when it destroys Rome, Jerusalem. It looks like it wins, and then it revives. It says in 3.5 days. Oh, it revives in the form of Christianity, right? So they think they're destroying Judaism and that godliness, people who follow God, there. And then, but he destroys it, and then it resurrects. But it resurrects now as Christianity, those who are, in the name of the son, and are keeping, you know, him. And so you have the war against these beasts. You have these beasts defined in chapters 12 and 13. You got the lamb and his, you know, people, which are defined. The term 144,000 is simply a term that means all of God's people. Okay? Now, it might be all of God's people on earth that are in this, that we're being persecuted and suffering, but, you know, Babylon's going to fall. I mean, all the way here in chapter 14, you know, angel saying, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. Well, actually, it's many, many chapters later when he says Babylon is done. But they've been pronouncing it. They've been pronouncing the fall long before it happens. And he brings plagues. He brings his bowls of wrath upon them. And so he is, but all of these things, the trumpets and the bowls of wrath, they are all God attacking the devil and his beasts, right? Does it matter literally what those beasts are? If I'm not fighting them, do I need to recognize them? Does it matter if I do recognize them, who the beasts are? Yeah. Is God not going to be able to destroy them if I don't know?
I think it's still you know, wise to maintain the caution of just wisdom of man. You know, whether it's not, you know, not looking specifically for, you know, the Antichrist or the beast or the dragon, but still just recognizing that any other message aside from God's is, you know.
And the thing is, none of the reality of what God is talking about, of him defeating the devil and his allies, depends on me and my knowledge or my strength or my weaponry, right? And that's all a good thing, right? If it depends on me and you, we're in big trouble. So it just doesn't depend on us. And so God comes down through here and he destroys Babylon. He defeats Babylon. But is when he defeats the beasts, is he done? No, because what was behind the beast? The dragon, who was trying to kill the woman, who was giving birth to the child, right? This is great. There is this huge heavenly battle between God and the devil. And in a lot of ways, Revelation is giving an image of it, right? And so when it happens, so when the world is persecuting us, what are the devil and his allies doing? This is kind of important, because when they persecute Christians, what do a lot of people think? They sometimes think they're doing the right thing in their viewpoint of the world. And yet, God is essentially saying, you know, well, I would say, a lot of people who are allies of the devil don't know they're allies of the devil. In fact, I would say almost all of them. Wow. There's very few people who consider themselves helping the devil.
A lot of them think they're doing the right thing.
Yes.
Or want, you know.
I mean, satanic worship, and I know some, converted a woman who was a satanic worshiper, who was seventh level high priestess, who ended up in FBI. She actually did.
Yeah.
She ended up being killed in FBI custody. Mm-hmm. She was murdered. She had been born in a satanic cult. She had risen up as kind of the leader of a satanic cult in Texas. I picked her up on a Sunday afternoon. We kind of stowed her away for a while. We weren't sure a lot of what she was saying was real. Ended up going to the police in our hometown. We moved her up to Washington because we were a little afraid of our families for a while. And in Washington, they finally got connected to the FBI. The FBI took her into custody, protective custody. And they were getting information from her about these satanic cults that existed. Because they're connected like churches are. And so she gave lots of information, and she ended up being stabbed to death while in protective custody in Tennessee. So... I'm very familiar with satanic cults, way more familiar than I would like to be. But it really isn't that many of them. Isn't that huge? Most people who are following, who are allies of the devil, don't know they're allies of the devil. They think they're even doing right, you know, from their worldview. And so, you know, the he basically is telling them, he gives them a long vision of him defeating the beasts, defeating the devil, and this rejoicing in heaven, right? And then finally, there is this great feast where God and all of his people can gather at the supper of the Lamb, right? And then the rider, you know, Jesus comes in on the white horse, and he settles it finally, and then throws Satan, binds him for a while, then ultimately defeats him, and not just defeats him, throws them into the lake of fire, and eventually throws everything into the lake of fire, and eventually even destroys the lake of fire. And then he gives this vision of the new heaven and the new earth. Now, I know some people see this as kind of vision of the church in 21 and 22. And though I think there's some truth in that, that in fact the church, we already have a lot of these blessings, I think the people who were receiving this message were like, God is giving them a vision of them getting to live with God, where there are no more allies of the devil. There are no more beasts. There are no more Satan. And God is now wiping away our tears. And so, does that happen figuratively? So, does God wipe away our tears in a metaphorical sense, even while we're in this world? I know the big bells now are all
noisy and loud.
At least we hear it now.
Yeah, that's probably true, right? We can rejoice even when bad things happen because God has done that for us. But aren't we still looking for that? We want it to be a little more real. We're still looking forward to that time when I will not be in a body that will die, that will get old. Yeah, so I think it's true that a lot of this does happen in the church, but I think just like we do, even with all the blessings we have as Christians, we're still looking forward to the inheritance that where we can put off this flesh. And I think that this image in chapter all the way to 21 and 22 is giving them the idea of this hope of living with God forever. Because reality, a lot of the ideas of what the realities we have of God living with us, those were real before Revelation was written. That was real when Jesus said it. When he says, we're going to come make our home with you, he was talking about in 30 AD, right? 40 AD. Those Christians had access to all that as well. And so I think he's trying to give Christians a sense of, I'm not only going to defeat the devil, but I am going to give you a place to live eternally in my glory. Okay? And now I think we are already somewhat in that, but I think we're limited in how much we can see of it because of our flesh. We still have to see it with faith rather than actually seeing it in presence. So he comes down and you have, you know, the New Jerusalem, which you described, and then we're going to come into, we'll just read the first five verses of 22, and then next week we'll finish up. But does that help you? I want you to have that image. Jesus coming to suffering people, telling them, I'm going to destroy your enemies, and the ultimate enemy, the devil, and I'm going to make your future blessed and full of glory and in my presence, so that you have no more tears, and that I will take care of you, and you will not be in this situation. At some point in the future, we're expecting that, aren't we? Isn't that the expectation, that at some point our suffering will cease? Yeah, I think that was theirs as well. Maybe that's what he's trying to get them to see. But if I am fully convinced and sure of that future home and dwelling in peace with God, then that helps me help get through this tough days, right? Because you can't take that away from me. And so he says, the angel showed me the river of water of life, brightest crystal flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city. Also on either side of the river, the tree of life with its 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit each month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. No longer will there be anything accursed, but the throne of God and of the Lamb will be in it, and his servants will worship him. They will see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads, and night will be no more. They will need no light of lamp or sun, for the Lord God will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever. And so you hear this, it kind of looks like, so you have this vision of this place to live in, we don't need sun anymore. Well, that doesn't sound like this existence, does it? But some people will look at like the healing of the nations. Well, why would you still have nations, right, in that situation? And one of the things, the concept of nation, in fact, you can see the Greek word here for nations is ethnos. Can you grasp what that means? It's ethnicity?
Not just Jews, all people That's everywhere. Right.
So it's the healing of every tribe on the face of the planet. That's what this is for. And so the nations doesn't necessarily mean countries. It means all the ethnicities of the world, the healing is for, right? And so this concept, this is the hope. And this is the thing I'm pointing out, is, does it matter if I understand all the details right to have this hope? I think we can have this hope. Because here's the thing is, in the late second century, Irenaeus, the bishop who wrote, yes, incredible. He wrote almost as much Bible. Or New Testament. He probably wrote as many letters, so it's as long as the New Testament. The writings of Irenaeus, there's a bishop in I always forget which bishop, but Irenaeus has all these writings called Against Heresies. He did not think Revelation had happened yet. He thought the 1,000-year reign hadn't started yet. Gonna start. The devil wasn't done yet. So, did Irenaeus understand it right? I don't think I understand it the way Irenaeus did. Does that change Irenaeus's hope? Did it change my hope? Augustine later. Remember the years of Augustine. Anybody remember Augustine's 900s?
No, it's earlier.
Earlier, 600. Augustine, prolific writer, more of the Catholic. Roman Catholic tradition, but Augustine, he has a different view of Revelation. Mine is probably more similar to his in that it's more metaphorical and not literal. Irenaeus had a much more literal view of Revelation. And so, even in a very literal view, how long would Revelation take to happen? Well, at least 1,000 years, right? But does it matter if you, this is the thing is, does it matter if we understand it right? Because was that the point? Was he trying to give all the people in the first century a perfect understanding of everything that would happen till the end of time? No. He's trying to give them confidence that our God will protect us, save us, keep us, and he will defeat the enemies, his enemies, the devil, and all of his allies. That's the big point of it. So, okay. Any other thoughts here? So we'll pick it up. And because that's really, in many ways, the end of the vision. Because in chapter 22 here, he basically starts saying a few words to John. And so I want you to think about the vision, the big picture of the vision. And I want you to, if you have questions, bring them up next week. We'll talk about the very end of Jesus' coming. How would they have understood that? Like I think I mentioned, Willis was asking me last week, or a few weeks ago, what does it mean, Jesus coming soon? He said, I wouldn't have understood that as it would start soon, but it wouldn't necessarily end soon. So my idea that Jesus is coming soon doesn't necessarily mean all this will be finished soon. But, you know, I mean, because he was coming and he was unleashing things for what looks like a long time in the vision before, because there's all kinds of destructions. There's partial destructions before a final destruction. Lots of little bits and pieces. But again, I don't think a perfect understanding of the details matter nearly as much as the point of the vision itself. So hopefully that makes sense. You'll have to let me know if that helps you. So we'll end there. I appreciate everybody your time today. Let's go ahead and have a closing prayer. Our dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this time that we could think on your vision that you gave to John. Help us to have hope and faith and trust in your victory over all of the devil and his allies, that we are confident that you'll take care of us and protect us, and that even if we die in your Son and in professing his name, that we know we have a blessed home, and that the love and the promises you've given to us, the inheritance that you set aside for us, can never be touched by any of the enemies, your enemies in this world. Help us to be hopeful and faithful and confident of these things so that we can press on to the very end and never give up in spite of the temptations and the getting tired. Help us, Father, to overcome so that we might receive the crown of glory and of life that you have promised. We pray these things in your Son's name. Amen. Well, thank you, guys. Man, I couldn't figure out why in the world I would like some AC today. even the auditorium was not going on like it should have.
I wonder if it's just the whole system, maybe thermostat or something.
Well, they're all different systems.
This isn't even on the same system.
So
the classrooms are individual.
Yeah, but even the auditorium, well, the auditorium is one system, and then all the classrooms are a different system. So we have two different systems even in the
room. I wonder if they're on the same circuit or something.
No, they're all running.